Good evening and welcome to the Astoria City Council meeting of Monday, May 15th. Glad to have you all here, and we'll start with the roll call. Chief Ames.
Councilman Hemelo.
Here.
Councilor Price.
Here.
Councilor Jones.
Here.
Councilor Brownson.
Here.
Here. Thank you. We have a presentation first, and we'd like Chief Johnston to come forward and Andrew Randall.
So I am introducing Sergeant Andrew Randall. Andrew's been with us for 15 years. I had to ask him today because it seems like he's been around for almost as long as I have, but not quite. And Andrew's newly promoted sergeant in January. And when we were looking for a solution to some of our social disorder issues, Andrew came up with a plan to develop something called Property Watch that really attacks kind of that crime triangle of a person, place, and I lost the third leg, an opportunity that just that so that we can start disrupting some of these issues a little easier. So I'm going to have Andrew come up, but before I do that, I just want to let everybody know that last night we lost a good friend of Astoria and of the Astoria Police Department, a fellow by the name of John Horde, who was a longtime reserve, volunteer, part-time employee. John filled more roles than I can count looking back at it. When we looked at John, John was the guy that if something needed done, he did it for the police department, either as a volunteer or as a paid employee. And he worked for the police department for more than 15 years and died last night in his home. So we'll miss him. So anyway, Andrew.
Thank you, Chief Johnston. I do have to disagree on one point, though. The way I remember it is Chief Johnston came to me and said, hey, here's a program that I think might help the city out. And so he asked us to take a look at it. So as we started seeing an issue with private property and the police being able to do something when business owners or property owners are not there. So we're talking like after hours, 2 a.m., if people are hanging out on the property, we don't have authority to go up and tell them they need to get lost, even though we know probably the owner wouldn't want them there, and it's hard to contact the owner at 3 a.m. So we started having some issues like that, and Chief Johnston, the way I remember it, came across this program that's being used by several other agencies in Oregon, Beaverton Police, Pendleton, Salem Police, and we took a look at it in 2015. And we kind of crafted something that we thought would work in Astoria. We came up with a legal agreement that Larry Henningsgaard looked at and said, this looks like it'll work. And we decided to do a trial program in 2016. And I think we did five different properties around Astoria that kind of represented some of the different mixture of apartments and businesses. And so we ran that for 8 months and sat back down and looked at what worked, what didn't work, what's going to help the police department be more effective with working with businesses. So the idea behind the program is to give the police a legal standing in being a helper to the property or business owner. The agreement gives the police department the legal ability to say, hey, you know what, we don't want you skateboarding at the bank because we know they don't want you skateboarding here. We know there's no signs, but they've given us the authority to just ask you to leave. And there's a list of, in addition to legal agreements, there's a list of what are called exclusion criteria that kind of outline, you may have seen these around, they kind of outline different behaviors that aren't necessarily legal, but aren't desirable by property owners. And that gives us some latitude to deal with people who are causing problems. You know, maybe at the apartments late at night, they don't live there, they're being disruptive, but they're not breaking the law. If a property or business owner was there, they could tell us to trespass that person, and they themselves could tell that person to leave. And if they don't leave, then they're breaking the law, and then we can take some enforcement action. So this agreement, which we reintroduced a few months ago, gives the department legal standing to assist business owners with that. And so when they sign up, we have the ability to use discretion in dealing with people that are creating problems on their property after business hours. There's no cost to businesses. We've asked the businesses to post the exclusion criteria, not just to help officers be aware of which properties are participating, but also to make people aware that might cause problems, that their behavior isn't acceptable there. We will take action using discretion and good judgment. We will work with the property and business owners in being proactive, and also talking with them specifically about different prevention principles. What we won't do is we won't provide legal advice. That's something we usually run into every day. People want to know, well, what would you do? What are my rights here? And we won't get into that. We won't evict people from apartments. There's avenues to do this. We're not one of them. We won't tow cars off of private lots. We can't be your personal cop, your enforcer, or your intimidator. And the policies and the way that's set up are specific to allow us to work with something that's legal and effective. Any questions about that so far? Okay. So we've introduced that. We have about 14 different businesses that have signed up and that are part of the program now. And that, like I said, it just gives us ability, like a couple of the ways we've used it so far is some of the alcoves downtown where people set up camp after hours. We ask them to leave. We haven't had to actually trespass anybody that I'm aware of. We say, hey, you know, there's the rules. This is private property. Please leave, or else you could be arrested. So it's been a very effective kind of low-level tool of working with those kind of problems.
So. Sounds good.
And I imagine that this doesn't just apply to after hours, but it could apply in the daytime to vacant storefronts.
Yes. If the owner's absent, that's the whole reason behind it. Like you're a business owner, if you're there, we want to come to you and get your input because it's your property. But this is a way to deal with it at 3 a.m. when we can't reach somebody, and we don't want to track that person down with a problem like that. So,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Any questions?
That's good community policing. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we're trying. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah, you can stay up here. Okay. Next, we have a proclamation for Police Week 2017. And I'll read the proclamation first, and then Chief Johnston will come forward. Whereas the Congress and President of the United States have designated May 15th as Peace Officers Memorial Day and the week in which it falls as Police Week, and whereas the members of the Astoria Police Department play an essential role in safeguarding the rights and freedoms of the citizens of Astoria, and whereas it is important that all citizens know and understand the problems, duties, and responsibilities of their police department, and that members of our police department recognize their duty to serve the people by safeguarding life and property, by protecting them against violence or disorder, and by protecting the innocent against deception and the weak against oppression or intimidation. And whereas there were 15,548 assaults against law enforcement officers in 2015, resulting in approximately 14,453 injuries, whereas since the first recorded death in 1791, more than 20,000 law enforcement officers in the United States have made the ultimate sacrifice and been killed in the line of duty. Whereas 394 new names of fallen heroes are being added to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial this spring, including Seaside Police Department Sergeant Jason Gooding and 142 other officers killed in 2016 and 251 officers killed in previous years. Whereas May 15th is designated as Peace Officers Memorial Day in honor of all fallen officers and their families, and U.S. flags should be flown at half staff. Therefore, be it resolved that the City of Astoria formally designates May 14th through the 20th, 2017, as Police Week in Astoria, and publicly salutes the service of law enforcement officers in our community and in communities across the nation. So if we could have representatives from the Astoria Police Department come forward. And present this. You're the designated.
I'm the designated.
Okay.
This week passed without much observance for a lot of years, and last year kind of raised the importance of it. This year we actually have two officers that are back at the National Police Week in Washington, D.C., paying honors to Sergeant Gooding. So thanks.
And next, we have a proclamation for National Emergency Medical Services Week. Whereas emergency medical services is a vital public service, and whereas the members of emergency medical services teams are ready to provide life-saving care to those in need 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and whereas access to quality emergency care dramatically improves the survival and recovery rate of those who experience sudden illness or injury, and whereas emergency medical services has grown to fill a gap by providing important out-of-hospital care, including preventative medicine, follow-up care, and access to telemedicine, and whereas the emergency medical services system consists of first responders, emergency medical technicians, paramedics, emergency medical dispatchers, firefighters, police officers, educators, administrators, pre-hospital nurses, emergency physicians, trained members of the public, and other out-of-hospital medical care providers. And whereas the members of emergency medical services teams, whether career or volunteer, engage in thousands of hours of specialized training and continuing education to enhance their life-saving skills. And whereas it is appropriate to recognize the value and the accomplishments of emergency medical service providers by designating Emergency Medical Services Week. Now, therefore, the City of Astoria, in recognition of this event, does hereby proclaim the week of May 21st to 27th, 2017, as Emergency Medical Services Week. With the theme EMS Strong, Always in Service, I encourage the community to observe this week with appropriate programs, ceremonies, and activities. So if we could have Don Thomas, I believe, come forward and
My name is Don Thomas. I work at Medics Ambulance, and we just thank you guys for your commitment to us. We've been here for 46, 47 years in Clatsop County, and it's been a privilege to serve you guys. And if you guys have any questions, we're here to answer. If not, thank you guys.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
We have a third proclamation this evening for Mental Health Month. So I'll read that one and then have a representative come forward for that. Whereas mental health is part of overall health, and whereas mental health helps to sustain an individual's thought processes, relationships, productivity, and ability to adapt to change or face adversity. And whereas mental illness adversely affects those abilities and often is life-threatening in nature, and whereas one in five adults experiences mental health problems in any given year, and such problems can contribute to onset of mental illness, and whereas one in 25 adults lives with mental illness such as major depression, bipolar disorder, or schizophrenia, and whereas approximately one-half of chronic mental illness begins by the age of 14 and three-quarters by age 24. Whereas long delays, sometimes decades, often occur between the time symptoms first appear and when individuals get help. And whereas early identification and treatment can make a difference in successful management of mental illness and recovery. And whereas it is important to maintain mental health and learn the symptoms of mental illness in order to get help when it is needed. And whereas every citizen and community can make a difference in helping end the silence and stigma that far too long has surrounded mental illness and discouraged people from getting help. Whereas public education and civic activities can encourage mental health and help improve the lives of individuals and families affected by mental illness, now therefore be it resolved, the City of Astoria formally designates the month of May 2017 as Mental Health Month in Astoria to increase public understanding of the importance of mental health and to promote identification and treatment of mental illness. And Cindy Daly. Cindy is the president of NAMI, for Clatsop County.
I will just add, NAMI is an organization that helps family members or people with friends that suffer from mental health issues. And we just remind everybody that these people that could be out on the street really don't choose to be there. And if we can end the stigma and accept that mental health issues are part of our community and see what we can do to help the individuals that are out there, we all will benefit from it. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next we have reports of councilors. Councilor Nimloa.
Thank you, Mayor. I got to attend the ribbon cutting today with you and Councilor Price, Mr. Estes, several staff people as well. At a city park, an enhancement in a city park today, an interpretive panel for Art DeMiro and his legacy and his role in the Mill Pond project. Big kudos to the Community Development Department for securing grant funding for that interpretive plaque, which is now at our park in Mill Pond, which overlooks the pond. It's got a really neat, concise history of the redevelopment of the site, which used to be the plywood mill, which shut down in 1989. It was Astoria's largest employer. And then it was a polluted industrial site. The city at the time went through an environmental cleanup, and now it's quite a site with mixed income housing. I've got to meet Art DeMiro's daughters, which was quite a delight. It was a nice positive activity today, and good to see something positive happen, especially in one of our great parks. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor.
Yeah, I don't have much to report. I do want to say that we've been pretty busy on the council this last couple weeks. We've had a couple workshops, both with parks and with homestays, and that's going to be ongoing discussions, and I encourage everybody to pay attention, to listen, and to give feedback on both those matters. And I'm also going to do a Meet the Counselor event at Three Cups of Coffee on Saturday at 9 in the morning. I keep moving it around trying to find people to a good time for people to show up. I do encourage people to come and talk to me. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Councilor Price.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Two items briefly. First, apropos of Mental Health Month proclamation that you just read, I attended the Helping Hands fundraising dinner on Saturday evening. I think Cindy Daly was there. I know she was. They raised a boatload of money, kicked off by a generous donation from Senator Johnson, and then three or four other people matched it. But the best news, I thought, was that, as Alan Evans said, he's the director, that he said they're this close to closing the deal on the Uniontown apartment building, which is the yellow two or three, two-story building in Uniontown. And they will have 19 either single or single family rooms there, and services, mental health services. I believe they'll have, he said three different services, mental health, drug rehab, I think. It's a whole reentry program. It sounds really great, and he's doing terrific work in three counties. Has come a long way from thugs off drugs, which my husband and some of the police officers, I think, weren't so enamored of to begin with, but they have really turned it around, and they have great support from law enforcement. And the other thing is that I wrote an op-ed about the Parks and Recreation Department and its budget, and I proposed something that Councilor Brownson and I support, which is a $3 per month per customer fee, parks fee, to help provide some a more immediate infusion of resources into our very strapped Parks and Recreation Department than could be accomplished by an increase in the hotel or transient tax that we've also discussed, but would take several months to come along. And as part of that, I put a poll on my website, and I put that on Facebook, and I sent it to the Senior Center for their large email list and to another community email list. I got, as of 5 o'clock today, I got 110 responses, 75 yeses, and 35 noes. So I think that what that shows is that, this is, of course, completely unofficial. I did take the opportunity, I did take the time to look at the IP addresses to look for duplicates to see if there were a lot of duplicates. I didn't take the time to see if, you know, people from China were, and so, you know, there are certain grains of salt that you have to take this with, but I think that overall, people are pretty honest when they did this, and I think it just really shows that the master plan was right, the parks master plan was right. Our community really, really values our parks and recreation facilities, and they're willing to go a little bit further to support them. Thank you. Oh, and I hope that we will be able to talk about this perhaps more formally in our first June meeting. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Councilor Jones.
Good evening, Mayor. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Just two things. It was great seeing a really big crowd at the Sunday Market opener yesterday. I hope lots of our local merchants and vendors were able to do really well. It sure seemed like they did. And also, twice in the past week, I heard positive feedback about our building inspector, Ben Small, one in regards to a home remodeling and one in regards to a commercial remodeling downtown. And in both cases, you know, the gist of the comments were that he's really good to work with and works hard at, while upholding the standards, being flexible where practical to get to yes instead of getting to no. So it's great hearing feedback like that from our staff. So thanks, Kevin.
Okay, thank you. And I have no further report. I think everybody did a good job of talking about all the things that have been going on. So thank you. Any changes to the agenda?
There are no changes.
Okay. Go to the consent calendar then. The items on the consent calendar are considered routine and they'll be adopted by one motion unless someone has asked for an item to be removed. Has anyone from the community asked for an item to be removed?
There have been no requests.
Okay, how about the council? Any requests to remove anything? Okay, could we have a motion then to approve the consent calendar?
I would move we approve the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Let's see, Chief Johnston.
Councilor Nemelo.
Aye.
Councilor Jones.
Aye.
Councilor Brownson.
Aye.
Councilor Price.
Aye.
Mayor Lanier.
Aye. Thank you. Our first regular agenda item is an ordinance to modify the city code.
And this is an item which is being brought forward with regards to the police department's enforcement of ordinances that deal with local tow companies that allows them to be able to remove abandoned vehicles from public streets, et cetera. And in preparation for renewal of the contract, our city attorney reviewed the ordinances and he located some errors in the state statutes that were referenced and proposed some process changes. You held a public hearing and held a first reading at your last meeting. Tonight it's recommended that council hold the second reading and consider adoption of this ordinance.
Okay, and do we need a motion to for the second reading or just have
the
second?
You can call for the second reading.
Okay, let's have a second reading then, please, of this ordinance. Ms. Brooks?
An ordinance revising City Code Section 6.400 to 6.530, providing for identification of abandoned vehicles and seizure of vehicles identified in City Code Section 6.500.
Okay, and then we need a motion to...
Right, if there's any council discussion, and then if there's not, have a motion and second for approval.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this ordinance? Could we have a motion to approve the ordinance?
I'll make a motion to approve the ordinance modifying City Code 6.400 abandoned vehicles and 6.530 impoundment.
Second.
Okay, we need a roll call on that one. How about Mr. Pearson?
Councilor Nimmo-Well.
Aye.
Councilor Brownson.
Aye.
Councilor Price.
Aye.
Councilor Jones.
Aye.
Mayor Lemire.
Aye. Thank you. The next item is a resolution to transfer appropriations within the Building Inspection Fund budget.
So Oregon Revised Statutes provides language to how to transfer appropriations within a fund of our budget when it's authorized by a resolution. And at the time that the current fiscal year's budget was originally prepared and then ultimately appropriated, the personnel services line item within the building inspection fund included funds for a full-time building inspector, code enforcement officer for the full year. Ben Small, who Councilor Jones referred to earlier, was hired and began work in October of 2016. We had outside consulting services covering the requirements of the building inspection requirements from July 1st through the transition. So therefore, a transfer in the amount of $20,000 is required between the personal services line item and the material and services budget within the building inspection fund. So this is really because we did not have a full-time staff person in place. We just need to be able to transfer an allocation from what would be a staffing position to a consultant provision as we covered the building inspection requirements of the city. It's recommended tonight that council approve the resolution, which transfers personnel services appropriations to material services appropriations within the building inspection fund.
Okay, thank you. Council discussion on this item? Could we have a motion?
I move we approve the resolution transferring personnel services appropriations to materials and services appropriations within the building inspection fund.
Second.
Let's see, Mr. Cronin, roll call.
Yes.
Aye.
Councilor Brownson.
Aye.
Councilor Jones.
Aye.
Councilor Price.
Aye.
Mayor Lemire.
Aye. Thank you. And our next one is the Recology Rate Review. And we want to have a, are we having a presentation?
I'll give a brief introduction and then we'll have Mr. Stimler come up and answer any questions the council may have. So each year, the city's franchise agreement with Recology requires submission of financial statements and a separate rate review for both solid waste collection and transfer station franchisees. And the purpose of this annual review is to determine whether Recology's, what's referred to as operating ratio, falls within the limits set by the franchise agreement of the city, and that translates whether or not rates should be adjusted. The collection and transfer station rates, as a part of this analysis, would remain the same for the coming year with a recommendation to include a 2% increase for medical waste collection which includes the increased disposal rates charged to Recology, as well as a reduction of 2.74% for the debris box and compactor ton rate for garbage collection. So as would be proposed and as is concurred by our finance department, there would not be an increase for the base services. As a part of some dialogue with the city council and as discussed at some recent work sessions, a request was made to Recology to provide information regarding additional service costs to include trash collection at city parks, trash and recycling collection at city parks, curbside glass collection, and also compost curbside collection. Presently, yard debris compost, and this is specifically dealing with the compost issue, presently yard debris compost could be added as a service whereby vegetable peels, rinds, and trimmings would be able to be included with any yard debris. However, food waste could not be placed in the compost or yard debris containers. And Mr. Stimler from Recology may be able to provide a little bit more clarification of that when he comes forward. With regards to the collection of garbage or garbage and recycling in parks, that's something which our parks director has discussed with council during some work sessions to be able to provide some offsets to our parks budget. These items are itemized in the materials provided by Recology as various options for council discussion. Should council wish to add one or more of the options, we would need to have some direction tonight so that staff would be able to prepare the appropriate resolution and have that resolution returned back to you for consideration. As I said, Fred Stimler from Recology is here tonight. He would be able to talk about how the various options would be implemented. It should be noted that some of these would not take effect immediately, that there would need to be some lead time actually for all of the various services. Mr. Stimler could answer any questions of council, and if there's any question of impacts to parks, I'd direct those to Ms. Cosby.
Okay.
Good evening.
Hi, Ms.
Where should we start?
Well, with your name and your address.
Yes. Fred Stemmler, General Manager of Recology Western Oregon, 5790 Southeast Parma, McMinnville, Oregon, or you could use the transfer station as the business address here.
Okay. Thank you. So, you might want to just talk about some of these things, and then it may bring some questions up then.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got quite a few things on the potential table. So as far as the initial rate submission, is there any questions with the packet as far as the annual process goes? It's pretty straightforward year. We'll just, if you have any questions referred to in my letter, we'll go there. Do you want to dive straight to the new service proposals?
Yes,
okay.
That'd be good.
So as Brett was going through, there's four options essentially on the table today. So parks garbage recycle, glass, and yard debris compost collection. And you did a phenomenal job going through each of those options, but if you want to dive deeper or clarify on what those options involve, glass, namely, I guess to start with that one, we just rolled this program out in McMinnville. That is once a month, 32-gallon residential and business curbside collection. So the obligation is for the cart to be set out near the curb. Unless somebody subscribes to side yard service already, then we will walk in and bring it out as part of side yard service. And we will come by and pick up 32 gallons worth of trash. It's shorter than this, but about these dimensions. And the reason for the 32 gallons is because when you fill up a container that's any larger than that with glass, it becomes extremely heavy, and we've seen risks of injury or significant spills if they topple over. So that once-a-month glass in McMinnville has been shockingly popular. I did not expect people would be as enthusiastic about glass collection, given that we have, in that community and in this community, we have a drop-off. There's options for glass recycling, but the convenience of the curbside has, I've heard, overwhelming positive feedback from McMinnville's community about that addition. I suspect that was because we're in winter. We also added out yard debris in that community, so that's twice a month. It follows the same collection schedules as recycling pickup does. And so every other week, yard debris is now getting picked up, and with spring now finally showing itself, we are delivering containers constantly. We have over 100 tickets going out, which is a lot for us in the Valley now. So there is interest in both of these programs in that community. And
Mr. Schindler, maybe if you would talk a little bit about how something like this would be rolled out. Is it correct that the rate would be applied to the customer and then there's an opt-in mechanism?
Yes. So the way that I would prefer that the program go out would be similar to what we did. So literally a year ago in McMinnville, I was having this discussion with counselors there. We agreed to add both of these services, and essentially it was about $1 million worth of containers. Had to get a truck, a driver, a route, sequence the route, get it media outreach. So in the end, it took about 5 months for the programs to get up and running. I don't believe that it would take as long to do this here, but it is going to be a couple months, 3 months, 4 months to get a program up and running for if so directed you wanted to add glass and yard debris services. The park services, depending on, that will take some time, but I can't imagine that much if you want to add that program.
Can you talk about recycling in the parks? What has been your experience with putting recycling cans in the parks?
Okay, so it's very difficult to successfully recycle in parks without having somebody who's there to monitor the collection. So when people are visitors to the area, especially from out of town, what I've seen is that people will put their trash in the closest container regardless of how it's branded. Especially with the diversity of the different types of containers and the colors of the containers, you know, a blue container in one community might mean glass and it might be trash in another, especially if you have people coming from out of state or from another country. So the one other city that I have lived in while I've worked in this industry that did have recycling in the parks, it failed until they had volunteers and staff that were working during the busiest times, and they actually had to guard the containers and coach people as they were walking by. So in the city, they actually hire people on Saturdays, which is the busiest time in the parks, and they are there from noon until 10 p.m. every week. And it works. but that's it. That's the only example I found. So my recommendation, with talking with several people about this, would be to start with the garbage collection if that is your desire. And we can pilot in, say, a couple of key parks. We could do Tapiola. We could do it at the Garden. And try a couple of test containers that would go out, perhaps, that have customized lids that are usually the circular holes. So if you go to the airport, they create essentially receptacles that by design limit what can go into it and also limit contamination as a result. So circular holes at the top to try and, if we put it by the baseball diamond, to try and catch beverage containers that people are consuming while they're at the diamond door. These kind of efforts, I think, would yield a solid test, and we could actually measure the results and then grow gradually.
Okay. I think you explained this, but I missed it. But so when the yard debris and the glass options for residents,
yep.
will they be charged for those services unless they elect to opt out, or will they have to opt in to start off?
I apologize. I actually didn't cover that. Okay. So in McMinnville, everybody pays for it. And then we did our media campaign, and people opt in. So, and then our customer service, every time people are calling, they're saying, would you like to add service? The reason why we did this is because We've done a blanket rollout where we brought the containers to everybody running back, and people immediately started calling and say, I don't want this, take it back. So then we end up delivering it, and then we end up picking it up. This way, it's a gradual pickup. And so within the first, we started the program in December, and we're right at about the 50% mark in McMinnville right now. And with spring, we're delivering every single day to everybody. So we're going to be at, I imagine we're going to be at 70% by summertime for these services throughout the community. And as much as I wish everybody wanted these programs, you never get everybody. There are some people who just are set in their ways and they want to have garbage and garbage only. And so I don't tell them what they have to do.
But everyone pays. All customers pay.
Correct.
And then and there's no opting out. You cannot opt out. You have to pay the fee, whether you have the service or not. You can opt out of the service, but not out of the fee.
In that community, that right. is how we structured it, because we didn't want to create a financial incentive for right. people to not pick up the program.
But you could structure it that way.
We can okay. slice it any way you want.
And for the glass recycling and for the yard debris recycling, those are both separate containers from the containers that we already have.
Correct.
And they're the 90-gallon ones.
90-gallon on the yard debris, 32-gallon on the glass.
Okay. And can you get 32-gallon on the regular recycling? Or
yes.
You can.
And you can also get it. And you can also get it in different frequency of service. So you can get once a month, every other week, or weekly collection.
Okay, I didn't know that. All right, thank you.
And so this is where the opportunity to actually reduce your bill, even with the however you want to proceed this. If we added everything and you had, say, about a 15% rate adjustment on all of these, mm-hmm. you've just added your yard debris 90 gallons twice a week and your 32 gallons of glass once a month. If people utilize these programs, you can take a net reduction in your overall bill by moving off of, if you're an every week garbage subscriber, you could take all of those materials that were previously going into the waste stream, take them out, and reduce your overall garbage subscription frequency.
But if you're already recycling otherwise, then you're not going to be able to, I mean, you can't really go. Anyway, yeah, I get it.
If you are already, say, at the lowest subscription level, you're on a 32-gallon right. Once a month or maybe will call, then yes, sure. you can't go any lower, which means you're in the low 20s per month anyways, and right. a 15% is $2 impact. So, yeah. It's...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so some of the information we got here is incorrect then. On option C for add glass, they put it in 90-gallon weekly and every other week. And gave us two different rates for those. So
that is a typo.
That's not accurate. What would be the added rate if we added glass?
The rate adjustment is correct. The 90-gallon designation is incorrect. You would change that to 30.
I've got two rate adjustments here.
Oh, yeah, I apologize.
Right. So which one?
For this one here, it would be a 30-gallon monthly. So, and the rate adjustment, the rate percentage, from our calculation was a 5% hit. So I would advise 5% for glass as a standalone, and I will go back and correct this this entry on the table.
Okay, and you don't know what the 5% would pencil out to for the actual dollar?
Yeah, because all the rates are just on the garbage. We don't charge on the individual.
Okay,
so if you have a 90-gallon, that's why it isn't a typo. I've just figured this out. So it's a monthly container. What you're looking at are the two most frequent residential collections, which
I
is
see.
90-gallon every other week
right.
and 90-gallon weekly collection. And
yeah.
those rates are correct at 37 and 24.
So whatever my current rate is at garbage, whatever my particular usage is, if it's once a month, every other, or four times, it will be 5% of that amount that I'm normally charged.
That is correct.
So if I'm getting charged 20, yeah, okay, got it.
Mr. Stemmler, what would the advantage be of curbside glass pickup? I mean, do you have any information right now on the recycling rate of glass? I mean, do you think that more of it would get recycled if we had curbside pickup?
Yeah, so it's I can't tell you definitively what it is. Essentially, people throw things away. It's kind of the same example with the parks, right? Is the convenience factor can determine whether or not somebody participates in recycling. So if I have to store the glass in bags in my garage, and then I have to go down to the depot in order to recycle them, that's okay for my family. Some other people say it's more convenient to just put it in the trash right now because it cannot go inside the recycling. It's a contaminant otherwise. So by allowing the convenience of having a curbside collection, we anticipate a large spike in your glass diversion. People will take their wine bottles, they'll use their jars, they'll take their jam jars and their beer bottles, and they'll start using that as an option that was previously going into the waste stream.
Do you have any examples such as McMinnville? Did you see that large spike in McMinnville?
The program's too new to really give you any weight diversions that I've got from pre and post. So I wish I could give you some, but...
Thanks.
Yeah. I can tell you that there's a lot of glass that is still in the trash stream by just driving in the trucks. You can hear it breaking as it's going in through the hoppers. Literally... So the opportunity for that to come out of the trash and go in there is real.
Mm-hmm.
The yard debris is the other one. It's generally called yard debris, but as you walk through, it does include compost, what a lot of people consider food waste, compost. So it's essentially all food that's not prepped. So the table scrapings, the plate scrapings that are after, anything that's processed, meats and dairies, those are called type 3 compost, and they will not go in here. This is I kind of follow the rule, if you can grow it, you can throw it in these yard debris programs. So anything in like the prep end or coming out of your yard off of fruit trees, vegetables, it all goes in there, and that's a large part of almost a third of what gets thrown away in average homes and businesses. So wow. There is a significant amount in type 1. And the hopes is, we were just looking at an anaerobic digester brochure, is some technology like that down the road will become available that will allow for the next expansion into type 3 processing for all food waste and cutlery and plates. Those all fall in type 3 processing, which we don't have access to right now.
Right now, is there any place for residents to dispose of compost besides in the trash or their own home composts? Do you provide anything like that?
So your type 1 can be dropped off at our transfer station in the yard debris right now.
Oh.
This is the general understanding. Types of compost, type 1 compost, is still quite new for a lot of our customers. There isn't a lot of public outreach and education about the distinctions between them. So, all of that can go right now to our transfer station.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, in terms of options that we might like to add or that I would like to add, I like the parks collection, the trash collection. We've talked about that. I think council sort of had a consensus on that. I would love to see Astoria become a sustainable city. I think there are various programs that provide benefits to cities who do become. There's one, for instance, at the University of Oregon, which is pretty astounding. It takes one city, gives them a year. They develop 25 or 30 courses around that sustainable city program. You get 500 students. They give you something like 40,000 hours worth of work to help you develop a fully sustainable city. However, and I think this would be good to have as a council goal, perhaps for 18-19. But for now, I'm concerned about two things. One is that... I live in a neighborhood, I think most of us do, where we're struggling to find places for the bins that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So to add one or two more, I don't know. I mean, we would have to do something about our zoning to allow things in our what do you call them, right-of-ways or something, because there is no place anywhere in my street for extra bins.
Yes.
In fact, most of the time they're in the street anyway. So, and the other thing is that we are now really wrestling with how to provide, how to ask residents for a little bit of money every month for core services, and like the Parks and Recreation Department. And so I am not in favor at this time of asking residents to pay for additional services that, I mean, these are really optional. It is not a core service. I'd like for it to be at some point, but not now. And so I very much like the parks trash, but that's it for me. Thank you.
Anyone else want to weigh in?
Well, just to clarify, Councilor Pleiss already clarified, but I want to double sure that I understand. So if you currently receive a, looking at option D with the yard debris, if you get a weekly 90-gallon pickup for trash, mm-hmm. then you and the council votes to do yard debris, each of those individual residents' monthly bill will go up by $387, regardless of whether they choose to use the yard debris option or not, or am I misreading?
No, that is correct.
Okay.
So if it was to be structured the same way as we did in McMinnville, then the rate would go right across all ratepayers.
And did you, when I think there was a question, and did you indicate that we could choose to have it be an opt-in or opt-out program, where if the resident doesn't want to do yard debris pickup, they won't get the can and they won't be charged for it? Or is it either or? Either everybody gets charged for it or no one gets charged for it?
Yes, absolutely. So we have communities where we have subscription based. So in those, so McMinnville, prior to doing the blanket, every customer is entitled to it. It was subscription based, and we had 900 of the 9,000 customers on subscription based. And the rate is different because it's a different denominator that you're working with as far as the total customers go. So in that case, it was about a $10 a month premium for anybody who wanted yard debris service. So when we rolled into the larger program, went through the whole community, that their bills dropped by $7 a month or $8 a month when everybody assumed the cost of the program. Okay. So you can do a subscription base, right? Where everybody doesn't pay for it. If
right.
you want it,
but then
you pay
gonna,
for it.
The people that do want to pay for it, it's going to be more than is indicated here.
Absolutely. Probably substantially, yeah, we have to do the math
more.
Over again. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would probably use the glass, but and the yard debris. But you know, I'm kind of reluctant to impose that on all the citizens that may or may not want it, because we don't have any kind of survey or anything to tell us if they want it.
And keep in mind too, the opportunity to do this does not have to be today. We want to present this as an option so that you're aware of it, and we are happy to continue researching this with you. I think the part that makes me feel good about this is we offer all of these products already at our transfer station. It's just the obligation is for people to actually take it there.
Okay. Are you able to query your customers in Astoria through your billing process or website, and maybe gather the information on what percentage of the residents want this service?
We have put inserts into our bills before. So the answer is yes. We're probably not the best at it, but we do have means to do it. So we can find a way.
Councilor Jones, I would just question as to the options with regards to adding parks collections. Just your thoughts on
that. Yeah, I'm in favor of the trash, and I'm not in favor of the recycling because of what Mr. Stemler said about it usually not being successful if you don't have a person employed, you know, to be there all day and monitor it. Otherwise, I would love to do it.
Yeah, and I'll chime in there too. I'm for the trash at the parks, and I think further discussion on both yard debris and glass, because you're right, we can, and I do, bring my yard debris to the transfer station, and we have a glass collection right down here downtown mm-hmm. too, so
yep.
So it's not too terribly inconvenient to drop that off. I think Cindy might be correct there that as an ultimate goal, we want to continue to research this and continue to promote recycling and, you know, generally good behavior. I wish there was a really good way we could do it in the parks. But like you said, if we had the resources to put people out there to monitor it, maybe so. But we don't, I don't think. So that's where I stand. I think I'm all for the parks garbage right now.
I'd kind of like to open this and let anyone from the audience who wants to speak on this matter come up. And please remember 3 minutes, but you're welcome to come up and state your preference on these options if you'd like.
If you don't mind, before we close this at the end, I just have two things I wanted to share as well.
Oh, okay, sure.
Good evening, Sean Fitzpatrick, 1046 Grand Avenue. So we implemented recycling at a bunch of our rentals probably about 10 or 12 years ago, and it's worked out pretty well. I think, I know we have glass at the Illihi. I'm not sure if we have glass at any of our smaller complexes, but we fill about two-thirds, three-fourths of a 90-gallon bin on a weekly basis, and that's picked up regularly. I think the glass is picked up once a week.
We do it in select customers that are high generators.
Okay. And we also have cardboard. We fill a bin, and I don't know, it's about 6 feet by 3 feet, about this tall. I don't know what the capacity of that is, but we fill that on a weekly basis as well. And then we have eight of the 90-gallon Wheeler bins that are picked up every 2 weeks, and they are virtually all full. I think we had pickup there twice a week before for the trash, and now we just have once a week. And sometimes disappointing when I lift the lid and find recyclables in the trash bin. But I would say that the glass has worked very well for us, and the others have worked well for us as well. I have two questions, and one is, when your big truck pulls in to pick up our trash, any of your big trucks pull in, do they have some sort of muffler system that gets really quiet? Because my tenants, and I hope some of the ones who have bedrooms closer to the, who are in the audience here, it just seems like it gets very quiet as it pulls through our driveway heading up the hill there, which I would have expected the opposite. So I don't know. Anyhow, our tenants always say it's great because when they pull in, they're very quiet. The only thing I don't understand is why we can't put glass in with our regular recycling, because we already have those bins there. And I know a few years ago we had an issue with your company because they wouldn't pick up our regular recycling because our tenants were putting glass in there. So I started sorting that so that we wouldn't have that issue. And it would be great if we could have glass recycling in with the other recycling.
Sure.
Thank you.
You want to go ahead and answer that?
Yeah.
So essentially, Oregon is different than our neighbors north and south in California and Washington, in that the Department of Environmental Quality has pretty much prohibited glass. They've come out, and part of that is because it contaminates. Actually, the glass shards break as it commingles in with the rest of the materials in there, and then that gets in with the fibers, and when it goes to the mills, it gums up as they're making pulp and going through their filters and shuts down their systems. Because we're a mill-friendly state, we have those. That's the brief explanation that I get. So essentially, it's state guidance that tells us to keep glass out of recycling.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else?
Evening, Chris Hafker, 68712. I'd really like to see a lot more recycling, because I go to the dump on a weekly basis, and I'm always shocked to see what's going in the dump. I have some buildings where they're multi-units, and I haven't been able to get like large containers for recycling. And maybe one possible solution would be to get some containers that are for communities in neighborhoods that are strategically located, because in the downtown, there are a lot of low-income people that don't have access to vehicles and don't drop off their recycling. And when I go through the trash containers, I'm pretty shocked by the amount of recycling that's in there. So I think it's very important for the future generation that, you know, we get over the $3 and something cents and ante up and make sure that we are recycling as a community, because In Portland, I had the experience of the compost and the glass and motor oil, all that curbside, and it was amazing how little waste went in the trash can. So I'd like to see us push for that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
I'm Renee Johnson. I'm here actually on behalf of Fort George at 1483 Duane Street. We would really love to see access to Tier 3 compost. In order to get to that place, we really need to start with expanding some of the services available throughout the city. We need to be able to recover basic stuff like glass, like yard debris, like some of those food trimmings. I think it's really important to know, I think this is a core service. When you are putting food in a landfill, it creates four times its weight in CO2 emissions and poundage. So that's a lot. And that's something that can be prevented by providing some education, some outreach. And I would also like to speak to the parks recycling. I think a pilot's a great way to start. I think when you look at other municipalities who have unmanned containers, there are some success stories. They may not necessarily be in the park that Fred was referring to, but you don't really have a way to know if that's going to be successful until you try. I think it would be potentially dangerous to put in containers at every park and see a lot of contamination, but I think it's worth giving it a shot to see if it's something that we could pull off with appropriate education and outreach here. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Mr. City Manager, what would you like us to do?
Well, I've heard from three councilors about their preferred options. I haven't heard from Councilor Nimoyle and yourself as to how you'd like to move forward. What I've heard so far is three councilors that would like to add parks collection, trash only, to the resolution, however, to defer the others and allow for more dialogue with Recology on some of the services for glass, curbside pickup, and yard debris pickup.
Okay.
I'd also like to follow up on the pilot program. So if we did something like did a pilot program, put one recycling in two or three of our busier parks just to see how it goes, what kind of costs how would that work?
I think
from your point of view.
I don't think there would be. We have routes that are going through the community already, so this would fold into one of the existing residential recycling routes. They could swing by. If we're doing two, three parks, it's a handful of containers. The collection cycles, the way we did it is the parks is 154 containers once a month during the winter, twice during the summer. We'd follow a similar collection schedule on recycling. We would partner with the city as we have on many other occasions and get it set up, and that'll be on us. I'd love to see this work, and if we can scale up, then we can talk about what it costs.
Okay, well, that sounds good to me.
Councilor Nimoyle.
I agree with trash collection in parks. I think that would build a lot of capacity in parks for a relatively small expense. Totally agree with piloting recycling in parks. You know, it's amazing that it's going to cost us an estimated $40,000 to get the appropriate garbage cans in our parks for you guys to collect the garbage. And it's also even more amazing that the budget committee agreed to an extra $80,000 to add recycling cans. But if the recycling isn't going to work, you know, why bother spending all that money? Sure. Totally agree with piloting recycling in parks. I agree with Renee. I think that home glass and compost pickup should be a core service. As a mother, I think it's our responsibility to future generations. And the point that you made, I think, is important, that with all of these recycling options, many customers would actually be able to lower their garbage bills by not having to throw away so much stuff. They could either switch to a smaller cart or go to an every other week service. I doubt we're going to get quite that far tonight, but I'm willing to support going as far as anyone else will go tonight. Thank you.
You got it.
Okay. Yeah, I would like the parks collection and a pilot, the recycling, in one or two parks, I think. The glass bottles, I think that would be a wonderful service because there are so many elderly people in this town, and it has to be hard to lift the, you know, gather up your jars and bottles and so forth and get over to the recycle it. So I'd like to see that included.
Well, we can collect some information. I did do a poll of peers, about 20 of us that were meeting at the same time to gauge interest in glass, and the majority, a strong majority, said they too would be interested in glass. So, and that was a diverse demographic of individuals. It wasn't just a specific age type. So we can work on this. Nothing needs to be decided tonight, and we're game anytime to do it.
So what I'm hearing from the council is we'll return back at your next meeting with the official Recology resolution, which we're required to do each year, but we'll be adding option A for parks collection, trash only, and we'll look at a pilot program for recycling, and we'll bring that back for your consideration at your next regular meeting.
If you could determine which location as well that you would like to continue working with Dave Larmuth. Parks Department's been doing a phenomenal job working through safety concerns and lifts on the containers. It's been a wonderfully collaborative opportunity. The last piece that I was going to just mention is for everybody. If anybody knows anybody with artistic talent that would be interested in going through our Artist in Residence program this year, we're going to be doing our second year. There's two paid internships available that'll be happening through the summer months with an exhibition in the September-October timeframe. It was a lot of fun last year. We had Don Stetzel and Sean Burrows create some amazing pieces that were featured down here. The idea for this program was actually born in Fort George, looking at the artwork up on the walls there and just appreciating the talent that comes out of this community. And so if you know any artists that want to take trash and turn it into something better, like an education resource and something beautiful, we're looking for applications. So you, they can find more information at the Astoria Visual Arts Association webpage. And please tell your friends, we really need artists. So, okay.
I was just going to thank you for that program. I know that it's really popular in San Francisco. It may have started there, and I'm really glad to see it here. Yeah. AstoriaVisualArts.org is where all the prospectus is, all the information, and it was great last year.
Yeah, the
really terrific.
The partnership is called the Coastal Oregon Artist Residency.
CORE.
CORE.
Yeah.
Mayor, I have two more questions on this item before you close it, if that's okay. Following up on that concept of putting recycling vessels, possibly for glass or maybe even compost, in neighborhoods, is that possible to just add places for people to drop off glass or other recyclables?
Yeah, so those are generally, we call those depots. And so it runs the same hazard that the parks collection, the unstaffed recycling collection is. So if you have a engaged neighborhood around that is willing to collectively, you know, police it or maintain it and be responsible for it and help coach one another, then these things can be a success. It is when they are neglected and abandoned that they become a trash magnet. People who don't want to pay for garbage will begin abusing these facilities and leaving trash. So we're putting a recycle depot out in Napa right now, for instance. And so we're putting it on county property where there are county staff to minimize the likelihood of illegal dumping taking place. So it is possible. It's kind of a coin flip as to whether or not you have contamination issues, from my experience.
Okay, thank you. And finally, to the mayor and council, the mayor and I would support curbside glass pickup, and I just wanted to make sure none of you all we couldn't get one more person who wanted to do that right now.
So, and just to clarify where I am on this issue, I would love to support both the glass and yard debris. The reason I'm reluctant is a few months ago we floated the idea of the roughly $5 a month increase in get people's gas bills in order to pay for needed park services, and there seemed to be a loud outcry from the community against that, that a significant number of people seemed to feel like $5 extra a month was more than they could afford. So I'm looking at this saying, well, if my vote imposes on residents an additional dollar, possibly $1.93 plus $3.87, depending on what their service is, it could be $1.25 and $2.52, which is, I guess, under $4. I don't have any sense of whether people will have the same sort of outcry. Why did the council increase my monthly bills by $4 a month? Which it's easy to say it's only $4 a month, but apparently a lot of people feel $4 a month is a lot of money. And for people on a fixed income, it might well be. So I would love to get some feedback that the community supports these additional bills, because I would love to have this be a core service, but I don't feel comfortable right now imposing that on the community.
Only in the interest of clarity, right? Those two services, it would be $1.90 plus $60. So for your weekly collection, it would be a $2.50 increase for that collection, and it would be $1.60 for every other week collection for residential if those two services were added. And the opportunity to reduce the subscription is there, so it could be a net savings. I'm not trying to sell you. I just wanted to get the numbers correct on that.
So if our glass pickup was in line every other week with our recycling pickup, then it would be $1.25 increase for curbside glass recycling. And the addition to parks would be 63 cents, so $1.
41 for that one.
41 for every other week, so, yeah, under
$2. Is that per month or every other week?
That's per month.
I would just ask that we table this just until we have finished the discussion about the Parks Department, because I do hope, and the mayor and I have talked about bringing the $3 per month fee to keep the Parks Department in some kind of floatable situation, so to add another fee on top of that right now, I think is not the best idea.
Okay, so I've asked for support, but I don't think I'm going to get it tonight.
Maybe not tonight, but maybe soon.
Yeah.
I won't hold my breath.
If it isn't too much trouble, if you could put in the bills a kind of a poll on these items, I think that would be very helpful. You know, just kind of if we had a general idea of how the community feels about adding glass, for instance, to their bills, and approximately how much it would be per month, that would be helpful.
Sure. I'll look at putting perhaps a web link address reference and keep a doodle poll open or something. See what kind of feedback we get that way. We'll attack it at a few angles and see what kind of information we can gather.
That would be great.
Okay.
We appreciate your work.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm sorry for taking so much of your time tonight.
Thank you. Okay, so.
So we'll be returning back. Ms. Brooks will prepare the official resolution for consideration at your first meeting in June with the addition of option A, which is the parks collection.
But also with pilot recycling.
Yes, that would be. Fred, just to clarify, the option A prices also include a pilot recycling as well.
Yep.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Oh, Fred.
Okay, our next item is a construction excise tax program update with our Community Development Director Kevin Cronin.
And I'll just give a brief introduction. So we've had a couple of work sessions with regards to the implementation of a construction excise tax, which would be applied to building permits for development of a fund which could be used to promote affordable housing within the city. And what would have been requested is some breakdowns about how much would have been collected in prior years. There's actually an adjustment which Kevin had made because of a 1 year when we had the construction of Patriot Hall at Clatsop Community College that kind of skewed our permit revenues, but also a couple of scenarios about how much the various rates of construction excise tax would generate. So what we're asking for tonight is for some discussion and dialogue with the City Council, and if you're interested in us pursuing this, we would ask that Council provide that so we can move forward accordingly with the required legal mechanisms to bring something back for your consideration. And Kevin, do you have anything else you want
to? Sure, really quick, Brett. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, members of Council. Just a quick, funny anecdote about recycling in my household. My son, Kieran, who's 11, you've met Kieran probably, he refuses to clean his room. He usually refuses to take a shower, but he will do recycling. I don't understand that. He loves to recycle. Anyway, I'm here to talk about the construction excise tax. We had the last work session in March. We talked about a range of different things within that program. Based on the minutes of the review of the minutes from that meeting, I have developed what essentially is a crystal ball, looking at some of the projections that the council is looking at in terms of what could be produced, in terms of revenues, as well as impacts to the permits. So we've provided lots of numbers for you to chew on tonight. I'm here to answer any questions about those numbers or about potential policy implications for where those revenues would go towards. Staff is ready to do outreach. I've been invited to the North Coast Building Industry Association general meeting this Thursday night down, I believe, in Gearhart at the McMenamins Sand Trap. And since we started talking about this, the Daily A has been covering it. And when something gets published online, there are other people that take notice. So since then, I've talked to folks from Washington County, the City of Eugene, as well as Tillamook County, that are very interested in what we're doing, and I'm interested in what they're doing. So I've been learning from their process, and they've been learning from my process and our process. So with that, I'll turn it back to the mayor.
What other communities in Clatsop County or in our general area are using construction excise taxes?
So no one is using it yet, but Cannon Beach, Mark Barnes, my counterpart in the City of Cannon Beach, is going through work sessions with the City Council in Cannon Beach. They have not developed an ordinance yet, at least I'm not aware of one. But Tillamook County, however, is ready to go to the County Commission on May 17th this week to look at a proposed ordinance. So they're a little further along down the line looking at this and taking a serious look at it. They're looking at a 1% construction excise tax. That would fund an actual position, and it would sort of a boots on the ground housing coordinator, as well as match and leverage potential federal and state funding for different housing projects within Tillamook County. And Tillamook County has a very aggressive new strategy that was put together through various partners down there over the last couple of years. And Kevin Leahy from Cedar has been tracking that very closely as a way to look at how we can implement some of those things here in Clatsop County.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to be clear on this because I say yes. From the standpoint that this could be used, Brett didn't read from this, but I thought he put it pretty well here, that we could dedicate these funds to achieve housing policy initiative. For example, funds could be dedicated to the revolving loan fund to provide lower interest rate construction loans to qualified products such as incentivizing zombie house rehabilitation, second floor housing downtown, and other endeavors. And that's what appeals to me, is that we're collecting from the contractors and from these projects for their benefit as well as ours.
Absolutely.
To be this high idea of a low interest revolving loan that helps them get their short-term loans to get the project off the ground and moving forward to where they can then get full financing and repay the loan with a little bit of interest, and the funds get back in there for somebody else to use. And I think that's just a great idea, and is something that, because when we talk about the city being able to incentivize affordable housing projects and of that nature, I keep asking the question, well, how can the city do it other than encourage and try and being cooperative? But this is really a very solid, tangible way that we could possibly do something.
So, Mr. Essies, are you looking for a council to indicate not only if they're in favor of moving forward, but give a number? Or you just want to know if we want to move forward?
Well, I mean, the more direction, the better.
Sure.
I mean, if it's moving forward, we could come back with, you know, an ordinance, but there'd just be blanks in there in terms of what the percentage would
right.
be. If the council
just
could come to
kicking the ball down the road a little bit.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's... I think that what would maybe even be a little bit beneficial, since Mr. Cronin's going to be meeting with the Home Builders Association later this week, if there was even some direction saying this is something we're seriously considering, you know, being able to dialogue with
yep,
those home
absolutely.
with the home builders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm in favor of continuing to look at the construction excise tax, and so the proposal would be, it would be commercial properties only, is that right?
That is correct.
And
that
so
is what I'm
we
recommending.
Discussed at our, at the last time we talked, I think it was at a work session,
right.
and we talked about, it was a surprise to some of us to learn that a apartment building, for example, would be considered residential for the purposes of this, so that wouldn't be covered. Is there a way that we could, do we have the ability to change the language of the tax so that it would include, for instance, that new apartment building that was built next to the Coast Guard
sure.
Exchange, in my mind, that was a commercial building,
right.
not a residential
sure.
home.
So when you get to that level of construction, a lot of times those projects are reviewed under the commercial code, but it's still considered residential. So if the council wants to add multifamily only, we could certainly look at that. But again, we have to give most of the money back to the state. We only take 30%. It's similar to the discussion you're having with motel taxes. You're gonna have to give away a cut for other things, and only you're only gonna get 30% as part of the construction excise tax program. We can certainly do that. You're just not getting that much back in return.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Cronin. So the way the statute works is that if you collect just for commercial properties, we are mm-hmm. able to keep
everything.
However, if we collect for either multifamily or single family residential or duplex, a percentage of that has to go to the state of Oregon for a housing fund, So we aren't keeping the greater piece of the pie.
Okay, and a percentage of all the CET we get, or just for those
just
projects?
The residential
okay.
portion, yeah.
What does the state use with that money? Does that money ever come back to a city?
It theoretically would if a local developer or nonprofit applied for those funds, but how often those funds would come back is the question.
Sure.
I guess the downside to this is that it's pretty expensive if you want to build something or expand, especially, you know, if we were to go up to 5%, is there a percentage that you're recommending?
I think you want to look at something at a minimum of 1%. Once you start going north of 5%, you're really starting to add quite a bit of project cost. So I would not recommend going north of 5%, but somewhere between 1% and 5%. Because
mm-hmm.
you want to be able to generate enough funds to be able to do something within the first few years. Given how busy we've been the last few years, we could, you know, raise some significant revenue to be able to do some projects within a couple of years of starting the program.
Well, I would be in favor of either a 0.5% or a 1%. I would think that going north of that at this time would be too much of a shock, perhaps. And I like the idea of including multifamily, especially large multifamily. I don't know if there's a sort of a number.
So multifamily is three or more.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Not sure then about that. But at this point, basically you're going to go to this meeting and try to get some feedback from the builders.
Sure.
We know what they're going to say. Like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are other topics we will discuss at that meeting, but this one's a popular one. And I think my counterparts have also been invited, so I'm sure it'll be a good topic for us to discuss.
Well, I would support a 1% rate, and I think that with Cannon Beach attempting to do this now and other counties are doing it, it's kind of like the marijuana tax.
Right.
Once one community starts it, then the others are going to do it too. So I don't think it's something that would be so so horrible for the construction industry that they wouldn't build here in Astoria.
I think what Councilor Brownson said hit on the nail, or the nail on the head. The money gets recycled back into the community,
right,
by the contracting community. So they're benefiting directly, mm-hmm, from those funds. When Jim Long from the city of Bend was here, that was the only thing going during the recession in Bend. That place got hit. It just got hammered during the recession, and that was the only thing going. I'm not projecting something like that happening in Astoria, but it's nice to have those additional funds that get recycled into the community.
I'm interested in, I don't know if anyone came here specifically to speak about that. I'd maybe be interested in hearing what people say before I make any final comments. Or I don't know at what point, Mayor, you wanted to ask.
Okay, Mr. Ozer.
David Ozer, 254 West Irving. I'm sorry, Councilor Jones, I can't give you any direction because I really don't have a position on this. I just want to say, in my job, I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Craft 3, and if these funds were intended to go into a loan fund, I can assure you Craft 3 would be happy to help in the design and servicing and implementation of the loan fund.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Have you heard from everybody on the council?
Well, I think that maybe Jones.
I'd like to look at maybe 1.5%, between 1% and 2%. I'm kind of interested in what kind of feedback Kevin gets from his outreach.
And Kevin, one of the things that I've heard from a couple of people who are engaged in certainly not in these big projects, but, and I think we talked about this before, that planning has been working on, or is considering working on, basically a checklist. So that when someone comes in and says, I want to build a brewery, or I want to build a multiplex, or I want to build an apartment building, they can be handed a document that says, these are all the things that you're going to have to do. These are the permits that will be required, so that especially when we talk about these large permit fees, someone can come in and be given that over the counter to begin with as,
right,
part of their decision making before they even go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that's currently available? Or
so, yes. So the council approved Article 9, changes to Article 9 recently, including that change was a pre-application checklist, and that was actually in your packets. So every time we have a pre-application, and that's required before any kind of Type 2 or Type 3 project, we actually check the things that they are required to do, and we hand that to the applicant. And then they're required to bring that back in as part of their application submittal. It does not have fees. We usually follow up with them in another email saying this is what is the projected estimated cost, both from a planning and building standpoint. But they're getting that information to be able to budget for their projects.
Yeah, I would just maybe add on to what Mr. Cronin said. It's difficult when for someone to come in and get something across the counter, because if you're looking at one piece of property, it could have a whole set of design review criteria
that another property may not. It's subjective by where it's located. But the pre-application process and the checklist is what we've been able to develop.
Yeah, so naturally, the more specific the client can be, the more specific you can be.
That's right. So my job is all about managing expectations of customers. And if I manage them up front, it makes my job that much easier, Nancy's job that much easier down the road. Sometimes we get caught off guard by something, but that happens very rarely.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I think to move this forward, you would like to know if the council wishes to move forward with the construction excise tax, and then you can draft an ordinance.
Right. What I've heard so far is that there's generally support from the council for a construction excise tax. Yeah. I've heard then from 0.5% to 1.5% being the maximum amount. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, this range has actually narrowed it down.
Yes.
Down to a kind of a sharper focus. I mean, this is something I think that, Kevin, if you're fine with this, to be able to dialogue with the construction industry, and then we can come back and the specific amount could be placed within the ordinances that would implement at a later time, and we can provide any feedback or testimony that we get to
absolutely
for you to make that determination.
Okay. Do you need a motion or not?
No. I'm comfortable in not having a motion at this point.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you very much. Okay, that ends our regular agenda, and so if anyone has any new business or something you'd like to discuss, please come forward and state your name.
Mike Angeletta, 265 West Grand. And I just want to thank some of the counselors. Over the last two issues were related to fees and taxes, that a few of the counselors expressed an interest to gather empirical feedback and to get feedback from the community before making a decision. And I just appreciate that spirit, and I like seeing that, and I hope to see more of it. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
So we'll need to recess to executive or adjourn to executive session. I don't expect we'll be needing to come out.
Okay. We are adjourned then. Thank you all for coming. We will go into executive session.
We have two. Okay.